Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. With tensions continuing to mount over the Ukraine crisis, UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres said on Friday that he still believed that military conflict in Europe will not happen, although if it did, it would be catastrophic. Addressing world leaders at the Munich Security Conference on Friday, amid an intense spike in shelling in eastern Ukraine by opposing sides and a concentration of Russian troops, Mr. Guterres said that it was high time to seriously de-escalate the crisis. There is no alternative to diplomacy, the UN chief said, adding that all issues, including the most intractable, must be addressed through diplomatic frameworks. All parties should be extremely careful with their rhetoric, the UN Secretary General continued, after noting that the threat to global security today is more complex and probably higher than during the Cold War. During that era, Mr. Guterres explained that safeguards and safety checks existed to allow nations to prevent crises by using back channels. Today, however, many of those systems no longer exist, and most of the people trained to use them are no longer here, he insisted, adding that miscommunication or miscalculation can make a minor incident between powers escalate out of control. Egypt, Kenya, Nigeria, Senegal, South Africa, and Tunisia will be the first African nations to receive the technology needed to produce mRNA vaccines that have proved so crucial in the fight against COVID-19. Announcing the news on Friday, the head of the UN Health Agency, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said that the coronavirus pandemic had showed that it was dangerous to rely on just a few companies to supply vaccines. It makes much more sense to significantly increase the capacity of all regions to manufacture the health products they need, with equitable access for all the goal, Tedros added. The World Health Organization Director General was speaking alongside the presidents of the European Union, the European Commission, France, and South Africa. To ensure that all countries can produce their own vaccines and other health technologies, WHO plans to open a biomanufacturing training hub to train people from all interested countries in scientific and clinical research and production. To Ethiopia now, where conflict in Afar region has forced thousands of Eritrean refugees to flee on foot after attackers entered their camp. In an alert on Friday, the UN refugee agency UNHCR said that unidentified assailants had targeted Bahale camp earlier this month after fighting engulfed the area. UNHCR spokesperson Boris Cheshakov said that the agency is working with the authorities and partners to provide emergency aid to the victims, who shared harrowing testimonies.
Refugees who trekked the long distance to the regional capital in Samarra told UNHCR staff that armed men entered the camp on the 3rd of February, stole their belongings, and occupied their homes. According to their testimonies, at least five refugees were killed and several women were kidnapped. Family members lost one another in the chaos of fleeing the camp.
More than 4,000 refugees are now in Afar's regional capital, Samarra, and another 10,000 are reported to be living in Afdera town, 225 kilometers from Samarra. Others are also believed to have fled towards the towns of Al-Tayfa and Daburé, further inland. The attack is just the latest instance where Eritrean nationals living in Ethiopia have come under fire since conflict erupted and spread from the northern region of Tigray in November 2020. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
As you may have seen and as you know, the Secretary General is in Munich to attend the annual Munich Security Conference. He opened the conference this morning, warning about the consequences of growing geopolitical divides, including the divisions in the Security Council. The Secretary General noted the concentration of Russian forces around Ukraine, said he was deeply concerned about the heightened tensions and increased speculation about a military conflict in Europe. Mr. Guterres said he still thinks it will not happen and that if it did, it would be catastrophic. He added that there is no alternative to diplomacy. It is high time to seriously de-escalate. He added that the United Nations system remains fully operational in Ukraine, including our humanitarian work in the Donetsk and Luhansk regions. The Secretary General also drew the attention of attention to the proliferation crises, the threat of global terrorism, non-traditional security threats like COVID, and the challenges posed by digital technology. He said that we need a surge in diplomacy for peace, a surge in political will for peace, and a surge in investment for peace. Speaking of the Security Council this morning, Helen Lalim, the head of the UN mission in Haiti, said that for the country to emerge from the acute political and institutional crisis in which it is plunged, it is imperative that all Haitian leaders resolve to engage constructively with one another to steer the country towards a process that will allow for elections to occur. Speaking about the security situation, she said the gang phenomena cannot be addressed through policing alone. The strategy needs to be complemented by socioeconomic projects and reintegration activities aimed at generating employment and revenue in the neighborhoods most impacted by the scourge of gang violence. And as you know, the Deputy Secretary General arrived back from Haiti late last night. She concluded her two-day visit by yesterday afternoon visiting a recently reopened school, the Lycée National de la Saline, where she learned more about the problems that Haitian children and their families face as they fight the right for education, and speaking obviously to children and their parents. She heard from students, teachers, and parents about how recurring acts of violence and pressure from gangs in some urban neighborhoods have led to the closure of more than 200 schools. Before leaving the country, she also spoke to journalists about the success of the international event for the financing and reconstruction of the southern peninsula of Haiti. She stressed that learning the lessons from the past, we now have to ensure that those resources lead to improvements in the everyday lives of people in the southern peninsula. She emphasized that the UN continues to be at the disposal of the government and the people of Haiti in their quest for a bright future. The deputy, Ms. Mohammed, also spoke this morning to member states on the preparation for the Transforming Education Summit. She said that the summit, which is to be convened by the Secretary General in September on the sidelines of the General Assembly, will turbocharge the efforts to set Agenda 2030 back on track. The Deputy Secretary General warning that many education systems today are under significant pressure. In some countries, she added, the pandemic has meant a worsening of the crisis for foundational learning. We have just 7 months until September, she told delegates, but together, she said, we can make the Transforming Education Summit not just a gathering about education, but a turning point for education and a hefty boost for Sustainable Development Goal 4. On Ethiopia, have some good news to report. The last UN staff member who had been detained by the authorities in the country has now been released. And as you'll recall, this is an issue that the Deputy Secretary General brought to the attention of the Ethiopian leadership during her travels there recently. But the humanitarian challenges do remain, and our colleagues at the UN Refugee Agency said today it is working with the Ethiopian authorities and partners to provide emergency aid to thousands of Eritrean refugees who fled a refugee camp in the Afar region due to fighting. Refugees who trekked long distances to the regional capital of Semara told UNHCR that armed men stole their belongings and occupied their homes. According to their testimonies, at least five refugees were killed and several women were kidnapped. With yet another refugee camp severely impacted, UNHCR remains extremely worried about the safety and well-being of thousands of Eritrean refugees caught up in the conflict. Moving on to Afghanistan and the humanitarian situation, our colleagues are telling us that the distribution of humanitarian assistance continued across Afghanistan. This week, close to 459,000 men, women, and children received food and cash assistance in various provinces. Winterization support is also ongoing with the distribution of relief items, including winter packaging and warm clothes. The World Health Organization and other health partners are providing urgent medical support and supplies in response to a measles outbreak in the two districts in the province of Badakhshan. I also want to flag that early next week, several emergency directors from the UN agencies and their humanitarian partner organization counterparts will visit Afghanistan to take stock of the situation and the ongoing response. Our colleague, Rina Gilani, from the Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, will be piped in from Kabul to talk about that mission on Wednesday, 23rd. Moving on with more humanitarian news, the Emergency Relief Coordinator, Martin Griffiths, has today allocated $2.5 million from the Central Emergency Response Fund to ramp up the humanitarian response to Tropical Cyclone Batsirai. The funding will enable us to provide drinking water and food, shelter items, basic household goods, healthcare services, assistance to survivors of gender-based violence, and other services, as well as to schools and logistics supports. More than 270,000 people urgently need shelter. They need water. They need sanitation, education, health services, and immediate food assistance. That's the result of a joint rapid needs assessment that was carried out by the government and our humanitarian partners. Around 21,000 people are displaced, and over 20,000 homes have been destroyed, flooded, or damaged. Many schools and health facilities remain closed or partially functional. Meanwhile, Tropical Storm Dumako made landfall in the northeast coast of Madagascar earlier this week on Tuesday. That directly impacted 5,000 people, and the government and humanitarian partners are closely following the trajectory of yet another tropical storm, Imnati, which has formed in the Indian Ocean, could hit the east coast of Madagascar early next week. I want to flag something from Malawi. The UN team there is working with authorities after a polio outbreak was declared following a case detected in a young child in the capital, Lilongwe. This is the first polio case in Malawi in 30 years, and it's the first case in Africa in more than 5 years. I think this again underscores the need for the global community to support countries in their vaccination efforts. On the ground, we are supporting health authorities to intensify the disease surveillance through contact tracing and active case searching. WHO organization and UNICEF are helping to step up polio vaccinations. WHO's Global Polio Eradication Initiative Rapid Response Team is going to Malawi to support the coordination, the surveillance, the data management, communications, and other operational needs. For many years, we've supported Malawi in preventing diseases such as polio through a robust national immunization scheme. Our UN team there commends Malawi for sustaining this disease prevention program, which has saved many lives and is ready to scale up and tackle the current outbreak. From Colombia, the UN verification team and the UN country team there issued a joint statement together with the European Union and two dozen embassies, calling on armed groups to declare ceasefires and cessation of hostilities and to respect international humanitarian law regarding the protection of civilians. The statement noted the importance of this call in the context of upcoming elections. The statement also said that Colombia should be able to hold free and inclusive elections in an atmosphere without violence. COVAX update for you from Latin America and the Caribbean. A shipment of more than 1.5 million vaccine doses arrived in Ecuador. They were donated by Spain. We say thank you. And Ecuador has now received more than 6 million doses through COVAX. Bolivia received more than 1.3 million doses donated by the United States through COVAX. We say thank you. This aims to vaccinate people under the age of 18, bringing the total number of doses Bolivia has received through COVAX to 8 million. And a tragic note that I want to flag from our colleagues at the International Organization of Migration. They said today they are alarmed by the mounting migrants' deaths and continuous reports of pushback at the European border between Greece and Turkey. According to IOM, at least 21 migrants have died on the land border between Turkey and Greece in 2022, accompanied by 10 deaths reported in the same period of last year. The IOM is worried about the continuing maltreatment of migrants in this area despite repeated call for action. The organization appeals to states to cooperate over border areas where there are irregular movements of people and work together to uphold the objectives of the Global Compact for Migration and to save lives and establish coordinated international efforts on missing migrants. And finally, I want to say a big shout out to our friends in Apia, because that country has paid its dues in full for 2022. Apia is the capital of which country? Well, it is in the South Pacific region. It is Samoa, but at least you tried to play, Edie. So you have the first question, which you probably would have gotten anyway, even if you didn't play. But anyway.
I have a few follow-ups. First, on the Secretary General in Munich, who's he been meeting? And I understand he's reiterated his belief that there won't be a war. Any further explanation of why under these more compelling military actions he still believes that?
Well, he continues to believe in the primacy of diplomacy. He continues to believe in have faith in global leaders that they will continue to talk, even if it takes a long time to try to resolve these problems. And as he put it, a conflict would be catastrophic, not only for the people of Ukraine, but for the region as a whole. He's had a number of bilaterals with European and others. I'm waiting to get the final list.
Okay, two other follow-ups. First, on Haiti, can you tell us how much money was pledged?
It was $600 million, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, and I was not mistaken. I think for us the important part now is to go through what these $600 million mean, which is how much of it is new money, where those money is coming from, and then as always, pledges are great, cash is better.
Okay, and on Ethiopia, maybe I missed that. When Amina Mohammed went there were three UN staffers still held. When were the other two released, and were they all national?
They're all Ethiopian citizens, and they're all United Nations staffer. I'll have to give you the TikTok of the other two.
Okay.
The other two were released in the past few days. Okay. Kristen, please.
Just a follow-up on that.
Abdelhamid, if I could ask you to just turn off your camera before you speak, because it's kind of making me seasick. I see it's moving all over the place, but I will come to you. Thank you. Go ahead.
Can you tell us any more about the Ethiopians and this last one that was released and what agency they work for?
I'll try to get what agency they work for. I mean, as you know, we had been raising this issue, had never really gotten any clarity as to why they were detained in the first place. But at this point, we're just really, really glad that they are released.
And were they Tigrayans? Can you find out that?
We don't keep data on ethnicity. For us, they were Ethiopians who were working for the United Nations.
And can you tell us anything on MINUSMA, now that France is definitely leaving, Are there any concerns on the part of the Secretary General about maintaining the mission there and what that means for the mission there?
Look, it's clear that it will alter the security landscape. We're taking a look at that. But, I mean, the mission's mandate continues. The mission continues its work of protecting civilians, often at great cost to the peacekeepers themselves. We will continue to work with the authorities to try to get a transition back on track and an acceptable calendar, and to solidify the peace agreements. Majid, and then we'll go back.
Thank you, Stefan. My first question is about a meeting today the Secretary General held with the President of Kurdistan Region and the Prime Minister of Kurdistan Region. What was the meeting about? Can you tell me more about what they discussed?
I'm trying to get a bit more detail. Our friend Melissa Fleming is with the SG, and I'm just trying to get a hold of and try to get a bit more detail. But it's been a quick morning, but I will get you something.
And on the issue of Ukraine, maybe my colleagues prior to today asked this question, but can you please explain why the Secretary General personally does not involve to mediate in this situation, this high tension.
I think the secretary has been very clear in the press conference that he had here, which is said that his good offices remain available. He has been, and his colleagues have been in touch with all the parties involved in this, with the message being constant, which is push for de-escalation, avoid inflammatory rhetoric, and continue to push on the road for diplomacy, and as the best and only way, really, to address all the security concerns that the various parties have.
Is he...
and a return, and obviously to also use existing diplomatic structures, which like the Normandy format and the Minsk process.
Is he planning to visit Moscow and meet President Putin?
I have nothing for you on that right now. Stefano.
Thank you, Stefan. Two questions. One is a follow-up on Ukraine. The Secretary General in Munich had in his speech, he said again something that he said before, that the situation is more dangerous than during the Cold War. Mm-hmm. And he explained why. Mm-hmm. Does he have any solution, does he have any advices for change the situation? A part of this particular, but if the situation is more dangerous, what he proposed to make it less dangerous? And then the second thing is on Libya. We were waiting for the Williams briefing, and was postponed. And the reason, do we have to worry also about that? The situation is getting worse?
I don't think you have to worry. It's just a matter of finding the right time to do it. The question you pose, I think, it would be good for a few hours long fireside chat. Part of it, I think, is a recommitment to international law, a recommitment to using all of these structures that the international community has built since 1945 to ensure international peace and security, to ensure the primacy of diplomacy. I'm happy to have another longer discussion with you. Ray.
Thank you, Stefan. In a letter to the Security Council, the Iraqi permanent representative complained the fact that Turkey is violating its territories, and after that, the Turkish permanent representative answered this letter to the Security Council, and he said that his country is defending its territories by fighting terrorists in northern Iraq. Does the UN have any comment on that?
I think these are an exchange of letters that we were asked to circulate to Security Council, which we did. Our principal position remains the same, is that the territorial integrity of Iraq, like the territorial integrity of any country, needs to be respected by all. Alan and then Mr. Abadi.
Thanks so much, Stefan. I have a question regarding Ukraine as well. There are several reports coming from the eastern part, Donetsk and Luhansk regions. The authorities announced the evacuation of population to the territory of Russia. They're accusing Ukrainian forces in some sabotage attacks. There were several explosions. As to the reports, Ukraine refutes it. So do you have any comment on this? And the second question, is the UN staff going to evacuate from the Donetsk and Luhansk regions or not?
No, we continue to, our staff continues to operate in eastern Ukraine along with other humanitarian partners. We have national and international staff. As of right now, there's no change in the posture of our staff. You know, as in many places around the world, UN staff stands and delivers as humanitarian needs grow. I have no way of independently verifying all the reports that you mention. I think Ms. DiCarlo was very clear in her expressing the UN's concern about the reported violations across the line of contact. And, you know, whether it is to local leaders or to global leaders, the message is the same, is de-escalate and avoid any action that could precipitate greater risk. Mr. Abadi.
Thank you. The Secretary General, as you said, often observes that the Security Council is disunited. Does he have any concrete proposal on how to bring more unity into the Council besides using diplomacy, because that's what the Council uses anyway?
Well, I don't know what else he could use besides diplomacy. I mean, any Secretary General doesn't really have any tools to use force to bring unity to the Council. I think as the Secretary General said, and as he would say, we live in a very dangerous world right now. The Security Council as a whole has a very important responsibility for the protection and of international peace and security, and we trust that all members of the Council take this responsibility very seriously. Abdelhamid, and then Oscar, and then we'll go back to the room unless there are other questions online. Abdelhamid?
Thank you, Stefan. Sorry for the camera.
No, it's okay.
Internet up. So my question is about today, a group of UN officials, including UNRWA, visited the family of Salem at Sheikh Jarrah. Why Mr. Tor Winslet was not included or was not part of the delegation that went to Sheikh Jarrah and expressed solidarity with that family threatened by eviction? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, indeed, today representatives of the UN humanitarian country team in Palestine, which included a number of UN agencies, met with the Salem family in the occupied East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. As you know, the family faces a family of 12 faces eviction during March from their family for the home they've occupied and they've known for the last 70 years. We have repeatedly called for a halt to forced eviction, demolitions in the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem. Under international humanitarian law, forcible transfers of protected persons by the occupying power are forbidden, regardless of their motive. Active steps must be taken to de-escalate the situation before another crisis erupts. The humanitarian country team urges all political community leaders to refrain from provocative action and rhetoric. Israeli authorities must take steps to ensure the protection of civilians, including Palestine refugees. As you know, Mr. Venislan is the overall senior most representative of the UN on the ground, and part of the people that report to him did this. I mean, went to the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, and I think the sentiments and the policy I've expressed is also a reflection of the position of UNSCO and Mr. Venislan. Oscar and then Maggie. I think I skipped you, Maggie. Sorry. Oscar, and then we'll go to Maggie.
Yes, thank you, Stefan. Stefan, today the Secretary General hosted the Munich Security Conference. He says that he's seen the five major reasons or threats that are putting human rights and democracy at serious risk. In his first reason, he mentioned that the crisis in Ukraine and his remark says that we can say that it's a clear message that the UN reform is imminent, or do you think that the Security Council legitimacy and authority are at risk?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Oscar. If you could just make it a little more succinct.
Yes, let me rephrase my question. Yes, and his first reason he mentioned in the crisis in Ukraine on his remarks and in Munich, he mentioned the crisis in Ukraine. So in his remarks, can we say that his clear message that the UN reform is imminent? And do you think that Security Council legitimacy and authority are at risk?
Well, you know, whether or not, I'm not going to I don't think the Secretary General would predict or would want me to predict when Security Council reform is going to happen. I think, as we all know, that's something that's been under discussion for quite some time. He has also, I think, expressed the position of the fact that the Security Council, as it is formed now, is not as representative of the world as it is today as it was in 1945, and has encouraged member states to come up with a solution for Security Council reform.
Okay, and my second question is about Haiti. Seeing the world data on vaccines, we're seeing that Haiti has less than 1% of its people being vaccinated. What is the UN in doing and a mechanism to get a bigger number?
We're trying to do whatever we can to get the vaccines through COVAX to Haiti. And I think Haiti is one of those prime examples of vaccine inequity, of people in different countries not having access to the medicine that we know is a lifesaver. Margaret Bashir.
Thank you, Stephen.
Voice of America.
Thanks, Steph. Steph, last week the BBC filed a complaint with the UN regarding the Iranian government's harassment and unacceptable treatment of its BBC Persian staff and their families in Iran. They were asking for action from UN experts and for it to be raised at the Human Rights Council. So can you tell us, have you received their complaint and what action are you taking?
Did you say from the BBC?
Yes, from our colleagues at the BBC.
I will check. If that went to the human rights folks in Geneva, I will check. I haven't seen anything, but there's not much I see anyway, but I will check.
I believe it was sent on February 10th.
Okay, we will double check.
Thanks. Please.
Okay. Thank you all. Stefano, you seem...
Yes. I asked you this before, and I will try it again and see if you give me a different answer.
Chances are pretty low.
Yeah, I know. I tried anyway.
Yeah.
I asked before, and I formulated in a different way, if the Secretary General believes that the concern that Russia has about its own security are legitimate, about the analysis states that Russia is doing all this also because fears that Ukraine eventually could join NATO, and that is a big concern for its own security. So does the Secretary General think that this is a legitimate concern, or is just an excuse to do whatever it's trying to do?
I think every country that is involved in this current crisis has legitimate security concerns. Countries have a right to have legitimate security concerns. Our message is, address them through diplomacy, address them through existing mechanisms. Okay, have a wonderful weekend, and I hope we don't speak during the weekend, because if we do, that's not good news, and we shall see each other Monday.